would you like to reduce inflammation and degenerative conditions? Sam Shepard will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Sam is he is a research scientist, inventor, and award-winning engineer with over 50 years of experience in biochemical, environmental, and medical innovation. And throughout his career, he has been awarded 42 patents for breakthroughs that span across medical devices, biochemical solutions, and environmental technologies. So Sam, tell us about your breakthroughs and your research when it comes to reducing inflammation and degenerative conditions. How did you come to find out what is required in order to reduce inflammation?
Heal Podcast with Lily Patrascu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest, best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
I've told the story several times, but a part of my work, I was diagnosed with an incurable bone cancer in 2003, and it didn't sit well with me, and I figured that I had all the tools in the toolbox to figure this out. So I went out and did a lot of research trying to figure out what was going on, and my case was terminal. There was no cure. I was producing, usually you produce 3 to 6 million red blood cells every day. And I was producing 40 to 70 million red blood cells every day. So my hemoglobin was climbing very, very quickly over a month period to the point that to keep me alive, I had to be phlebotomized. And that's what I did. I did that for 4 years, every month for 4 years. But I was losing the battle because my blood pressure would spike. It became more frequent. My blood pressure, 280 over 160. I knew I was going to stroke, probably have a blood clot, hit the brain, the heart, or the lung. And that was how I was going to step out of here. Well, I just figured out that there's got to be some animals. The question just came to me that there's got to be some animals that don't get cancer. So at that time, I was working for a project for the Department of Defense under what's called DARPA. And I had access to a database called ProQuest. And I queried it and I found five animals that apparently don't get cancer. Salmon, pink flamingos, sharks, elephants, and naked mole rats. And we did a mass spec on those tissue samples, and we found there was one molecule that was found in all five species but shouldn't have been in any of them. It wasn't a requirement for any of the animals. The animals didn't produce it, but it was found in all five species. Since then, we know that lobsters and shrimp don't get cancer either, but at the time, we only had the five. So we identified it as astaxanthin, and it comes from an algae called Haematococcus pluvialis, and I began growing that in my backyard in one of those, I call them hillbilly hot tubs, but you can buy the Intex hot tubs at Walmart. And I began growing it in my backyard and got very good at it. And I learned how to stress it, how to make the algae think that its pond was drying up. And it turned from bright green to bright red, redder than your dress, in about 48 hours. And I would skim it off, put it in my eggs. I knew it was 3.8% astaxanthin. So I could dose myself based on how many grams of the biomass, the algal biomass that I ate. So I did that. It started out at 4 to 5 milligrams per day. It concerned me that it was a red algae. Red algaes have a tendency to be quite toxic. And I thought it might do damage to my liver and my kidneys. But so I pulled blood work and I found there was no damage. So then I got brave, went from 4 to 12 milligrams per day. And my phlebotomies went at 4 to 5 milligrams per day. I was being phlebotomized every month without any astaxanthin, but at 4 to 5 milligrams per day, my phlebotomies got pushed out to once every 2 months. So my hemoglobin wasn't climbing out as quickly. So statistically, it wasn't significant, but at least it wasn't killing me. So that was the good news. Then I got fairly brave and I said, let's just triple the dose. So I went up to about 12 to 15 milligrams per day. And my phlebotomies got pushed out to once every 4 months. That was significant. So now I had three curves. I had the curve, which was the control, no astaxanthin. Then I had the slope at 4 milligrams per day. Then I had the slope at which my hemoglobin climbed out at 12 milligrams per day. So I had three separate slopes, and I could use those slopes then to calculate how much do I have to take so that I'm never phlebotomized for the next 50 years of my life. It's just a mathematical calculation. And it turned out to be 96 milligrams per day if it stayed on that same slope curve. And it's asymptotic. It's actually a square root function. But so 96 milligrams. So I started taking 100, and I cured an incurable cancer. And I have, that was in 2007, I guess, 2008. And my phlebotomies ended. The doctors called it a miraculous remission. He would not consider that something natural could have done that. So I began to give it, at that time, I didn't know what caused inflammation, but began to do some research because I had studied free radical chemistry extensively for polymer manufacturing. We use free radicals to initiate polymerization of polystyrene, polyethylene, polysulfone, and polyvinyl chloride. Those were three fields that I worked in extensively. And we use free radical chemistry, and that was my specialty on how to initiate those reactions. So it clicked on me that this has got to be a free radical type of chemistry. There's, because it's extremely reactive. They permeate in the mitochondria. Whenever there's a metabolism of sugar or energy conversion in the mitochondria, it leaks electrons in the 1 and 3 complex. And I knew those electrons would stick to an oxygen and end up producing singlet oxygen as a free radical. So when I did the research, I found basically four, there's five, but there's a nitrogen-based reactive species also. But I focused on these four. Superoxide, singlet oxygen, the peroxyl non-radical, and the hydroxyl free radical. The hydroxyl free radical is extremely reactive. It's the one that causes the DNA to mutate at the guanine level to actually mutate into cancer. So we now knew the site at which these DNA mutations occurred. We also knew that those four free radicals in a chronic inflammatory disease state, your liver would produce a protein called a C-reactive protein, and that protein is a measure of your systemic inflammatory disease state. And it turns out, when we looked at all the data, that if we could keep a C-reactive protein less than 3 milligrams per liter, you didn't get these diseases. You didn't get the inflammation. We have to have some inflammation because it's a very potent signaling requirement in the metabolism and the function of normal cells. But in excess, we get these diseases. So then when we begin, it took me 8 years, by the way, I'm sort of condensing into a few minutes. But in that study, we found as we age, hsCRP in our blood test would climb. And I actually have a curve. I don't know whether I can show it here or not. If I can get to the, I can't get to my background. How do I get to my background? Anyways, so I pulled blood samples from 5-year-olds up to 105-year-olds. And I found that early on, this is why young people don't get cancer. Early on, we have glutathione, catalase, and superoxide dismutase. These are cellular antioxidants that we produce at the cellular level. And they keep us healthy during childbearing. Period. We can do a lot of stupid things when we're young and get away with it. And the reason is because we can stay up late, we can drink beer, you can smoke cigarettes, you can eat whatever you want, because we have these intracellular antioxidants protecting us. Well, for women at age 42 average, and for men age 50, our glutathione level produced naturally in our cells plummets. Our HSC reactive protein, our chronic inflammatory disease marker, climbs. That's called age onset disease. And so we start getting these, you know, wake up, your fingers are stiff. You got some arthritis in your knuckles. You got arthritis in your ankles. Your C-reactive protein is well above 3. That's a measure that you have this inflammation. And what the Velasta does is the hydroxyl free radical is a molecule that is missing an electron in its outermost orbital. I promise there won't be a test. You won't have to answer any questions or anything here, but it's missing an electron in its outermost orbital. That's what makes it extremely reactive. And whatever it comes into contact with, it will steal an electron from that organic molecule. When it does that, that organic molecule becomes a free radical. And it just cascades down the chain until you end up with a mutation. It happens at the DNA, for example, at the guanine level. Guanine has the lowest oxidation state. So when these free radicals steal an electron from the G part of your DNA, G and C are always in the ladder of the DNA, and T and A are always in the ladder. Those four make you who you are. There's only 4. So when G loses an electron to a hydroxyl free radical, the repair mechanism, the PARP or the BRCA1, converts the G into a T. A T cannot line up with a C. So it flips the C to an A. You've just mutated your DNA. So we now know at the molecular level where this is happening.
Tell us about, like, first, what causes inflammation? And what can people do to actually reduce it? Like, when I understood, like, on a chemical level, but I'm thinking more like in terms of, like, practical terms, what kind of activities cause inflammation, and what's the solution for it?
Yeah, anything that causes a mitochondrial hyperactivity without the antioxidants to reduce the free radicals form. Now, what causes it? There's several causes. So we have diet. So that's a whole other discussion. We have UV radiation, alcohol. Fructose and alcohol are two poisons. Whether it's in the fruit or it's in high fructose corn syrup, doesn't make any difference. So fruit is a poison. And that's hard for people to understand, because we've been told that fruit's crucial in our food pyramid. And thank goodness Bobby Kennedy has flipped that upside down now. But fructose was entered into our diet in 1966 and phased in from 66 to 72. And our cancer rate in death resulted in one cancer death in 50 prior to 1966. After 1966, it's 1 in 3. So we know that fructose is the cause of inflammatory disease. I don't eat fruit.
Are you saying, like, all fruit is leading to potentially to cancer?
Not all fruit. It turns out that you can stay away from a desire perspective fruit that has less than 4 grams per 100 grams of fruit. That includes blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, but no oranges, no orange juice, no dates, no grapes. All of those fruits, and they're very well understood by the National Institute of Health. All of those fruits should be eliminated from your diet. No fruit juices. They're all extremely inflammatory.
Wow.
Let me give you an example. I've got probably 40 cases right now of children age 8 to 18 with fatty liver disease. And it's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So the rule of thumb is, if you give a child 3 sugar sodas a day, that's the same liver damage as if you gave that child 3 beers a day. Alcohol and sugar are processed the same way. They're extremely inflammatory. And that's what's causing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Thank you. So are you saying, like, fruit is actually poisonous for our body and can lead to inflammation?
That's absolutely true.
That is so shocking. I just had, like, one, I mean, you cannot see it. It's like a kiwi fruit juice. And okay.
Nope. Wow. Cut fruit out of your diet completely. Let me give an example. Fructose cannot be used by a single cell in your body. Not one. So when you take in fructose, it goes to your pancreas. Your pancreas converts it into triglycerides. your triglycerides, when they reach about 400 micrograms per liter, is converted into LDL cholesterol. Your cholesterol comes from fructose. It has never come from animal fat. But how do you keep doctors employed? You keep people sick. So fruit was at the top of our food pyramid for a long, long time because it created inflammation, and it's actually the precursor to a lot of these diseases.
Thank you.
Alcohol's up there also.
Are there any other causes of inflammation?
Sure. There's ultraviolet light, obviously, for skin. There's physiological. If you're under stress, if you're psychologically under stress, your body produces cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine at a fairly high level in the fight or flight reflex. And when that happens, they have to be wasted. They have to be taken out of your system. Well, the way they're taken out of your system is they go to your liver metabolizes epinephrine, norepinephrine, and they generate a huge concentration of these free radicals. That's why if you stress, it's going to shorten your life. That's even biblical. You know, why worry? It's only going to shorten your life. They knew back then that stress, physiological stress, was a problem.
Are there any other causes that you can mention that contribute to inflammation?
There's medicines. In the pharmaceutical world right now, any prescription drug that you take has what's called a chiral structure to it. A chiral structure is when we produce, let's say we produce amoxicillin in the laboratory, not from life, we synthetically produce it. So in the laboratory, whenever we'd make an organic molecule, we would make both a left-handed and a right-handed molecule. This is man-made. Only the left-handed molecule stops disease. The right-handed molecule is a poison. Now, you get all of your side effects because your body can't deal and react away this right-handed molecule. So it accumulates somewhere in your body. We learned this from thalidomide. If you remember the thalidomide babies, thalidomide was a compound given to women in the 50s and 60s to stop morning sickness during their first trimester. Well, the problem is the left-handed molecule of thalidomide would stop morning sickness. The right-handed molecule stopped the growth of their arms. It terminated the stem cell growth. So the children were born with no arms and no legs. That was a wake-up call. And when we got into chirality chemistry, it became obvious. That's why we have to eat living things. Living things only produce left-handed molecules. Made things produce both. So we get side effects. Whenever anything's made by man in the laboratory, we're going to get sick. It's going to create another problem. So that creates inflammation.
What do you mean by living things?
Plants, animals. Food's very important. That's what sustains us. But synthetic food isn't going to work. Just because it's chemically the same, it doesn't have the three-dimensional shape for us to be able to handle that. We saw it a little bit with some of the sugars, like sucralose, great to stop your glycemic index. But when it gets into your colon, it created a huge inflammatory problem. And that's what caused the loose stools, the diarrhea, the water loss, the side effects of that.
If imagine someone cannot completely eliminate sugars, and most people can't, what can they do to combat these inflammatory items like sugar and beer and fructose and fruit and other things that you mentioned earlier? Is it possible to combat that with taking something else?
It is. The way we measure it right now is we look at your hsCRP, which is a blood test. It's absolutely crucial that you get that included in your blood work. Doctors don't like to run it because they cannot treat to it. The only treatment for an inflammatory disease state or a predisposition to get a disease are steroids. And doctors aren't going to prescribe you steroids. So if they can't treat it, they don't want to know about it. So it was taken out of our blood work about 20 years ago because everybody was in an inflamed disease state, but they didn't want that, they couldn't treat it. So it had no value to the doctor, even though the patient was going to get sick with some sort of cancer, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, it was going to lead to a disease. And they make a lot of money treating on those diseases. So that's the gig. That's the, you know, the game's up. Kennedy has figured it out. And so it's got to stop. Now, the way we stop it is we look at your hsCRP, and that's a measure, direct measure of your chronic inflammatory disease state. It is a pre-indicator of you getting another disease. Everybody presents differently. Some people present with heart disease. Some people present with cancer. Some people present with type 2 diabetes. Some people present with irritable bowel, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. Now we can stop all of them. We can prevent you from ever getting those diseases simply by keeping your hsCRP under 3 mg/L. And we do that with the astaxanthin. It's actually a glucosidic form of astaxanthin. That's what Velasta is. And it very readily absorbs into the small bowel, higher than any other product on the market. And it gets into the bloodstream. It goes and neutralizes all of these free radicals. It has the ability to donate electrons to the hydroxyl free radical, converted into a hydroxyl ion that is then converted into water, H2O, simply by absorbing a hydrogen, without itself becoming a free radical. The astaxanthin is so unique in that it can resonate up and down its chain and reach a stable resonance so that it itself does not become a free radical.
Are there any other things that people that already have inflammation can do to reduce inflammation and the potential to get to degenerative conditions?
Sure. The best way to start off is with diet. No more bread, no more flour, no more pasta. It's actually basically meat and vegetables. But you can do whatever you want as long as you keep your hsCRP under 3 mg/L. I'm not into being the Grinch that stole the quality of your life or anything like that. But if you see your hsCRP getting greater than 3, then know what to do. Cut the fruit and alcohol out of your diet to get that number back down again. Take Velasta at about 100 to 200 milligrams per day. And it will knock your hsCRP down under 1 within 7 days. We have people with, it works on all 3 forms of arthritis, rheumatoid, psoriatic, and osteo. And in 7 days, your arthritis pain goes away. You notice a difference in 7 days. This is not something you have to wait on. It's a pretty remarkable product.
Thank you. Have people taking astaxanthin, have they noticed any side effects?
None. We actually have it with, there's no contraindications known at this point with any medications. We studied it for a long time, Lily, when people were on warfarin or blood thinner medications, and they got on Velasta, and their blood got extremely thin. And they called us back and says, well, shoot, this Velasta is acting like a blood thinner. It's thinning my blood. So I asked them, I said, are you on heparin? Are you on warfarin? Are you on a blood thinner? And in all cases, they said, yes. I said, no, that's not the Velasta that's doing that. The Velasta has normalized your blood. You no longer need those medications. And it clicked. The doctor isn't always right. The drug isn't always correct when your body's normal and functioning normal.
What else would you like people to know about Velasta for reducing inflammation and degenerative conditions?
It's the only patented natural supplement that was ever allowed by the U.S. Patent Office. We have 2 patents on it. The first one was, and it's the title of the patent is a method for the process of using astaxanthin for the treatment of inflammatory disease, particularly for the treatment of cancer. Now that sets flags up with the FDA because the FDA requires a disclaimer. So on one hand, the patent office requires me to have that as a statement on our label. And then the FDA says this product cannot be used to treat, cure, or diagnose any disease. So there's a conflict there. The other Well, there's actually two patents on it. The other patent was when we had people who were going in for radiation treatments for cancer. Those people usually experience secondary burns. It's not talked about much, but on the backside where the radiation comes out, it burns. It can create a secondary burn. All 100% of all people that were on Vilasta that went through radiation never got any secondary burns. It stops the sunburns. It acts as a synthetic or a biological suntan ingredient in your skin. That's how the algae, that's why it produced it, was to protect itself from the sun, the UV radiation from the sun. So we adopted it primarily for SpaceX and for space travel, because if you get outside the magnetic field of the Earth, you're exposed to very high levels of radiation. Well, if you give the astronauts Vilasta, you can neutralize that radiation and the effects of that radiation.
Thank you. So what conditions can this medication be used for?
The diseases primarily, it does not work on type 1 diabetes, but it works on cancer, PD-L1 positive cancers, and also non-PD-L1 type cancers, because there's two mechanisms of kill that the Vilasta adds to the protocol. So we have, it works on cancer, it stops the arterial plaquing, the inflammatory arterial inflammation that causes heart disease, it stops that. So cancer, heart disease, irritable bowel, you'll see a definite change in your bowel routines. And then we have, we've studied it extensively for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And that, the Parkinson's was very unique. We gave it to a lady up in Hershey, Pennsylvania for arthritis. She was 82 and severe arthritis. Within 7 days, she called me back. She says, "This is remarkable." She said, I've been dealing with this for 40 years. I don't have any more pain when I wake up from my arthritis." And I said, that's the way it's supposed to work. And she said, "But that's not why I'm calling you." She said, "I'm calling you because you didn't know that I had severe Parkinson's." She said, my tremors were so bad I couldn't hold food on a fork. I couldn't go out anymore with my daughter and eat in a restaurant because I would throw the food into the next booth. And she says, "All of my tremors have stopped." And the light went off. And I'm going, okay. If that's the case, then Parkinson's is not caused by a lack of dopamine production in the brain, because that wouldn't be the cause of this. So when I did the research and the chemistry behind it, what I found was that Parkinson's patients have a very high concentration of a chemical compound called hydroxydopamine. Hydroxydopamine is what we give to animals to give them Parkinson's, so we can test Parkinson's medications on them. Well, hydroxydopamine is made by the reaction of dopamine plus the hydroxyl free radical yields hydroxydopamine. So if your hydroxyl concentration, free radical concentration, is very, then it's going to react with the dopamine and it's going to give you Parkinson's. So what do doctors do? Doctors say, "Well, we'll just hit it with brute force. We'll just give you more dopamine and try to overwhelm the hydroxyl concentration." Well, they can do that for a short period of time, because then the hydroxyl concentration creeps up. You become resistant to any more dopamine and you die. What we focus on is we reduce the hydroxyl concentration. The moment we do that, the symptoms of Parkinson's go away.
Thank you. Can you tell us about the components that kind of lead to the Parkinson's or Alzheimer's? Are you saying that, like, for example, what causes that these levels of hydroxyl go up? For example, from an activity kind of perspective.
As the natural antioxidants in our cells diminish, we can no longer neutralize those hydroxyl free radicals. So the concentration chronically just keeps building. And more of these free radicals are generated in our body, and eventually they present with a disease.
Okay. Does that mean that, for example, if you're like very happy and at the same time you're very toxic inside because you you created that kind of free, that kind of environment where there's like a lot of free radicals in your body, you kind of lead your body towards Parkinson's?
Absolutely. And everybody presents differently, not just Parkinson's. It could be that you lead somebody into cancer, somebody into heart disease. It's all in the individual at that point. Which part of the DNA has been mutated is going to dictate what disease you're going to end up with.
Thank you. What else would you like people to know about the medication that you created for reducing inflammation and degenerative conditions?
Yeah, this is a natural supplement. There's nothing artificial about this. It has the highest what's called ORAC score of any antioxidant on the planet. Turmeric, for example, has an ORAC score of 122,000. It's a great anti-inflammatory, but it has an ORAC score of 122,000. Velasta is 2.2 million. It's 20 times more powerful than turmeric. And it gets into the body very readily because we put it into the glucosidic form. It has a sugar molecule attached to the astaxanthin. So when it gets into the small bowel, it sees that sugar. The sugar gets absorbed very, very quickly, and it drags. It's called a Trojan horse. It drags the astaxanthin into the bloodstream with it. Now when it gets to the cancer cell sees that sugar, and cancer will use 16 times more sugar than a normal cell uses. As soon as it sees that sugar, it says, I want that. Well, it drags the glucose in to its cell, but it's chemically attached like a chain to the astaxanthin. Once inside the cancer cell, the enzymes in the cancer cell cut the sugar off and uses it for fuel. Now the astaxanthin is intracellular. It's inside the cell. Now that the hydroxyl free radicals that are generated because of the high metabolic rate of cancer in the sugar conversion generates these free radicals. Now it neutralizes by converting the OH zero charge into an OH minus one, a hydroxyl ion. And there's several other pathways that the National Institute of Health have now been able to research and find out. And I would, don't believe it. You don't have to believe anything that I'm telling you, but just Google or search astaxanthin and NIH and whatever disease, heart disease, cancer, Parkinson's. They've done a lot of research. I testified in Washington, D.C., April of 2019, and I told 200 attendees. These were congressmen, senators. The five majors were there: John Hopkins, Sloan Kettering, MD Anderson, Mayo, and the Cleveland Clinic. They were shocked. It went on for 2 hours. And I told them exactly why we get sick, what's causing these diseases to happen. And they allocated a lot of money to the National Institute of Health to prove me wrong. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. That's called the null hypothesis. But they ended up proving me right. And it's very easy now to go search those National Institute of Health documents and research papers. And they're all publicly available now.
Thank you. Is there any additional research that you want to share about what you discovered around Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and Velasta? Like any other link or any other activity that may lead to reducing these degenerative conditions and reducing inflammation in terms of like personal lifestyle or routines or any other thing that you've discovered?
Great question, Lily. What we have found, let's take Alzheimer's, which has got everybody up in a tizzy because it's a terrible disease, terrible. So what causes Alzheimer's is a misfolding of the amyloid beta protein in the brain. This is a protein of decomposition. When proteins break down, they form this amyloid beta protein. Well, we have little things in our brain called microglia and astrocytes. So when the amyloid beta protein forms, the microglia will chew it up, break that protein back down into nucleotides that can be recycled by the neurons in the brain, or they can be expelled through the blood-brain barrier. But if there's no activity in the microglia, these amyloid beta protein will react, especially if you're in an oxidative disease state. If it touches an OH-free radical, which crosses the blood-brain barrier routinely, it will misfold. So instead of having a protein that's perfectly formed, and I'll give you some idea here. So when a protein is formed, the ribosome grabs a hold of the RNA and it reads down the RNA and it creates a protein. It just keeps adding amino acids onto it until this protein is formed. Okay, then when it comes out, the way the protein forms, it folds back on itself perfectly every single time. So you end up with this big old knot of gooky protein floating around in your bloodstream. The functional group of that protein, of this thing here, is this receptor. So when it comes down to a cell, let's take insulin, for example. When insulin comes down, it fits perfectly like a lock and key into the receptor on the cell wall. That triggers an electron transport down the membrane, opens up the glucose channels in the cell. They're normally closed. It hits that charge when the insulin hits it. The glucose channels open up. Now sugar can flow from your bloodstream into the cell. Now, let's take this protein, and I'm going to expose this to a hydroxyl-free radical. So you got this thing coming along, and it steals an electron, creates an electrostatic imbalance in all proteins. It's called peroxidation of lipids also. This thing unfolds. Now, statistically, what's the probability of trying to find that receptor on the surface area of a misfolded protein? That's called insulin resistance. That's type 2 diabetes, all caused from that free radical interfering with the three-dimensional shape of the insulin protein. Now, when this, let's take the amyloid beta protein, when it misfolds because of hydroxyl free radical, it goes from a gook into a flat. Now you have the axon from the nerve body going down to the dendrites to communicate with other cells. It has an insulating material called a myelin that keeps the electric charge from short-circuiting into the brain. So it's like a wire. This amyloid plaque will fold around it, and it will accumulate around that myelin, just like that, and it'll degrade that myelin. Now, this has no insulation on it. When it fires an electric charge, it short circuits. That's what causes Alzheimer's. Now, MIT, Dr. Li-Wei Cy, I give her a huge amount of credit. Her research was phenomenal. She's the one who determined that amyloid beta plaque is what's causing Alzheimer's. So the way she got around it was she would give these mice Alzheimer's disease, and then she would drill a hole in the rats' heads, insert a fiber optic into the occipital lobe of the brain, and she would flash light, electromagnetic pulses, onto the brain. That activated the microglia in the brain. They become hyperactive. Now they eat the amyloid and decompose the amyloid beta plaque and she was able to reverse Alzheimer's. So I contacted her and I built electromagnetic pulse weapons for the military. Very familiar. I could change the frequency in your brain and create fear and anxiety in an enemy soldier. I can probably make you do things you really didn't want to have to do. But so I contacted her and I said, if I have a device where I can send that same electromagnetic pulse through the eye, because the eye is very good at converting photons into electricity at the same frequency. So she asked me if I had such a device. I said, yeah. I said, I built those devices. So we sent some. They tested it external. So now just by sitting, and I watch it 45 minutes every day, sitting in front of a light that's flashing at a certain frequency, activates the microglia in your brain. They become very active. And for 36 hours, they eat the amyloid beta plaque that's formed in your brain, and they clean your brain. They're the waste management of our brain.
Thank you. Are you saying that for most people, people are always like in a state of inflammation, and you need to create almost like you need something that will eliminate that inflammation on a recurring basis so that your brain is basically free of this kind of inflammation, and then you reduce the likelihood of getting a degenerative disease with this kind of device that you created, yeah?
Correct. It's a two-step protocol. The first step is we want to stop the amyloid beta plaque from forming. That's what the Vilastat does. It stops the free radical from causing it to form. But in most cases, because you're only diagnosed with Alzheimer's after about stage three, there's seven stages in Alzheimer's. So it's always late sort of when you get to it. So you've already got some plaque formation. So the way we get rid of the plaque formation that's there, we give them Vilastat and stop the production of the amyloid beta plaque. And then simultaneously, we activate the microglia to begin chomping and chewing it away.
Wow, that is so fascinating. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you so they also can find out how to reduce inflammation.
Yeah, they can do it through Vilastat at info@vilastat.net. And I do talks at universities on entrepreneurship. And what else does an old man have to offer other than just helping people out?
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.